All right. We are back. Ian Boyd, Paul Wadlington, continuing our positional review. This time, we've got a lengthy, in-depth review of the defensive line, specifically the interior defensive line and edge. We're going to skip all the pleasantries, Ian, and we're going to cut right to it, and we're going to start inside out. We're going to start with the strength and the known quantities of this interior defensive line. We're going to talk about the players. We're going to try to have message discipline and not tangent and tell Warren Sapp anecdotes, but we'll probably fail, but we're going to try anyway. Hey, let's talk about these guys. I want to start off with.
Hey, wait, wait, Paul.
Yes.
Quick tangent.
Oh, no.
Could this be one of the best interior Texas D lines you've seen? Like this century?
For, you know, very similar to the defensive backs when you were asking me that about how they rank.
Yeah.
It's the lack of, oh my God, look at that guy, superstar, you know, first round draft pick versus just a bunch of dudes who are going to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And some will be drafted in the fifth and some will be drafted in the third, but they're all going to play in the NFL and you're going to look back and be like, oh man, we had a lot of good players on that D. But yeah. Casey Hampton, is he there? No. Casey Hampton ain't there.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Well, when we get into it, there may be one guy that could potentially fit in that mold, but we'll see.
Ian, I served with Casey Hampton. I knew Casey Hampton. Byron Murphy is no Casey Hampton.
Oh, no, not Murphy. No.
Oh, okay. Alfred Collins. All right. Let's talk about it. Let's start with the interior. I want to start with the biggest veteran, not the biggest interior defensive lineman. He's got some competition for that, but we're going to start with the biggest guy. That's Tavondre Sweat, all 6'4", 355 pounds of him. I got to admit, Ian, when the new updated roster weights came out, I was hoping to see Tavondre around 335, and then I saw 355 and went, uh-oh. What do we think about old Tavondre? This is a guy who's about as experienced as you'll find at the University of Texas, who hasn't actually started all that many games. He's appeared in 48 games, though, as a Longhorn, and not starting is sort of a technicality. He actually played more snaps last year than any defensive lineman. So what do we think about big Tavondre? Where is he going to be best used and disposed this year?
Well, yeah, I had the same thought about the weight. I don't know what his ideal playing weight is, but you'll hear them talk about it, and then the new roster will come out, and it's just the same story.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think he'd play better at 330, something like that. He's going to be a big guy no matter what, right?
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, how much is he going to weigh after the Rice game?
Yeah, he'll be down to about 330. Yeah. He'll drop about 20 pounds of water weight.
Right. So there's like a potential Tavondre Sweat that could be really special, where he has a higher motor and he's able to play with. He has some twitch to him.
Yeah,
like he can be pretty quick off the ball and do some stuff, but it's very, very sporadic. And we assume because 355 is just too much weight to play it and do it consistently. Whatever happens with his weight and his conditioning, wherever it is, we know that he can just stonewall double teams, cause problems one-on-one, and give you sporadic like penetration and disruption.
He actually can be an elite pass rusher in spurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spurts being the
so
key.
We don't know how many. So like this theoretical Tavondre that's in good enough shape to do that consistently is like, I mean, just a destroyer of worlds. But I don't know if that player actually can exist or if we'll ever see him, if he does.
So we might see him simply because we might just tell Tavondre, hey, we're going to play you 30 snaps you're going to play in four or six, 4 to 6 defensive possessions. And while you're out there, play like a maniac. Save nothing because you don't have to save for anything. You're bring it. And if you can go super hard three plays in a row, and the fourth, you feel like you're dropping off a little, we'll get someone in there. You're good, man. And so I think that could be it. Do we think we want to use him as a three tech or a nose tackle? I mean, we're pretty much dead set on nose tackle now. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like Alfred Collins has just emerged in such a way that he has to play a lot, and he's going to be more of a three technique generally. But like, let's say, how many snaps did you just give DeVondre Sweat? 40?
30.
30? Well, probably some games, maybe 20 are at three technique and 10 are at nose, and some games, maybe 20 are at nose and 10 are at three tech.
Yep,
Positions
I agree.
they're a little more similar in PK scheme than in others. So
One underrated aspect of his game that really came to the fore last year when he kind of learned to time it up and experiment with it. But while lined up at three technique against passing teams or passing downs, he would get good initial penetration and get his big paw up in the air. And he had like four or five batted passes. And I think he redirected another three or four passes that the guy would have tried to throw through that window. That'll be an interesting thing to look at when you line him up with Alfred Collins and you line him up with maybe Burke on the edge. And you have a whole group of really long arms getting penetration, that can really mess up windows for a quarterback.
Oh, and Gabriel Nightmare.
That is a Dylan Gabriel nightmare. You and I are thinking exactly the same. And by the way, Chandler Morris, not exactly 6'5".
Yeah, I bet we could think of some other ones too in the Big 12, but those two for sure.
No doubt. So let's go move on from Tavondre simply because we have so many good guys to talk about. You mentioned Alfred Collins. Let's talk about him. So there's the great quote from Charles de Gaulle, who said, "Brazil has great potential and always will." Meaning, Alfred Collins has always had this incredible, bewitching potential, but until you reach that potential, you always will have potential.
Yeah.
But this appears to be the year where it's getting put together. I don't want to revisit all the history of Alfred Collins and why it hasn't happened sooner. I've detailed it actually before, and I detailed in my preview, the 2023 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football, 11th annual, available now, Smashwords, Amazon, and Apple. What we're hearing in practice is a dominant player, frankly.
Yeah.
And at 6'5", and finally around 310, he gained good weight finally, and he sort of resigned himself to that interior life just in time to maybe play some edge minutes now. So that's, you never know. You make plans and God laughs, and that certainly applies to football. Collins is super athletic. We know about his length. We know about his get off. He can exhibit good power when he needs to. That tends to be a little more bursty. What he has struggled with at times is just traditional anchoring, which is, hey, occupy this space, take on this double team. Pete Kwiatkowski likes to use his interior defensive linemen to do that, quite frankly. And Alfred Collins isn't really built for that. He's built to penetrate, get upfield, cause disruption. I think that the two have almost sort of met in the middle on this, where Pete says, look, I'm going to need you to anchor some based on some of our calls. And Alfred says, okay, but I also want to sprint through a gap and see if I can, sack a quarterback just as he's getting into the last step of his drop. So, what do we think about Alfred? Any thoughts?
That was well put. I think that he's almost like a natural defensive end. He's so athletic. I think he wants to use his quickness and his length to just remain in space. Or that's been the issue up till now. But that guy, it's like you got to play through people some. And I suspect that he's getting much better and much more comfortable at playing as more of a true three technique rather than a defensive end. and push pull, whatever, play through the lineman instead of just wanting to dance around him, you know? Like he had some snaps that you're gonna remember where they would bring him on like long stunts against Oklahoma State in
Yeah,
2021.
and he killed it.
And oh my gosh, it's like, how is this guy? This guy should be an All-American. Look at the way he moves. But yeah, meeting in the middle. One thing on him, I am curious if he two gaps this year, or if they just hybridize the scheme and let him one gap.
So, two gap, one gap. Can you very quickly explain the difference?
Yeah, there's a few different variations, but generally what that means is in a one gap scheme, the defensive lineman is free to like just attack the gap. Like the space between linemen, you go get in that space, you attack it, and they're going to try to stop you. You'll have to fend off blockers, but you are attacking. You are attacking particular spaces, right? A two gap technique means you are attacking the blocker and you are either blasting him up the middle and positioning yourself to be able to go left or right based on what the running back does. Or there's another technique where you play heavy, which means you take one gap, but you're looking to shove the blocker sideways into the next one so that they cannot run through that gap either. So you're effectively defending two gaps at once. I think Collins would be better at that
Yes, he
style
is.
than the former. And so they may just have him do that, the
He
heavy.
is. I'm so glad you mentioned that. That is what he's better at. And a part of it has to do with his length.
Yeah.
When he gets a guy, controls him, and then holds him off with his arms, the offensive lineman can't contact him. Like you're kind of flailing in the air trying to make contact with him, and you're being controlled. You're getting big brothered, right? A classic example of a heavy two-gap team would be the old school New England Patriots. They would control blockers at the line of scrimmage, and then basically there'd just be this wall of defenders and no daylight. And your running back just ducks down and gains a yard, and it's second and nine. So there's different ways you could skin the cat. I think, look, one of my grievances with Pete Kwiatkowski early, frankly, in 2021, is he didn't adapt his system to what he had, and he wanted to play like he still had Vita Vea, right? 2022, you saw some more flexibility. 2023, I think you're going to see even more. And I think some of that had to do with the influence of Bo Davis as well.
Yeah, could be.
Let's move on. Let's talk about a guy who can play through people, Byron Murphy. Strongest guy in the weight room, strongest play strength on the field. I don't even know if he's 6 feet tall. I mean, he might be 6 feet, maybe 6'1", as they list him optimistically. But he plays big, he plays strong, and he actually has the characteristics that so many disruptive tackles in the Big 12 and in college football have, which is he's not 6'6", 330. He's compact, he's got a high motor, and he's very twitchy for his size. So even though he's sawed off, he doesn't get big brothered because he gets into those guys very quickly. And he's good at slapping their hands and arms off of him so that they can't hold him off. I just think Byron is the most consistent player in that interior defensive line. If Collins has the most flash and upside, Tavondre Sweat has his flash and upside. I think Murphy is the highest floor, who's also a highest floor guy who's also good, if that makes sense.
Andrew Billings.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities to Andrew Billings. If you guys remember him, he was a powerlifting champion, very, very strong player in high school. Went to Baylor, where he was a very effective interior defensive lineman, and he is still in the NFL. So, Mr. Billings is built a lot like Byron. Byron is not as strong as Andrew, and Byron's real strong. So, that gives you some idea how strong Andrew
Yeah.
Billings was.
Also almost went to Baylor and they
Almost
finished
also went to Baylor.
late in the class.
That's exactly right.
He's a starting nose tackle. Whatever position Sweat plays, Murphy seems to have starting job lockdown.
I agree. Yeah. I think all these guys are going to play so much. The starting position is going to be sort of whatever.
Right.
But I think they will start Byron for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's a leader. I think he's also a little bit of a locker room enforcer, which is what Texas needs.
Yes, always. Everyone needs that, but Texas really needs that. I think up until like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, coaches probably would have told you they expect Byron Murphy to be the best defensive tackle on the team. Now Collins has opened the door to potentially being something that Murphy can't quite be.
Yeah, we're gonna have to see it on the field. So I'm curious. Fourth guy I want to talk about. Imagine that there is a guy who's out there who started 24 games of high-level FBS football for a top 20 national defense, and he played the most snaps on their defensive line, and he was honorable mention all conference. And he could play both three technique and nose tackle. And he transfers to Texas, and he's your number four interior defensive lineman. Do you know the name of this gentleman? Have I helped you? Do you have enough clues, Ian?
That's Trill Carter,
Trill Carter.
former Minnesota Gopher, dropped his oars, got off the boat.
Got off the boat.
DJ
Got
Fluck.
on the Longhorn yacht.
Yeah.
He's tired of paddling in the rowboat. He wants to get on a yacht, see what that feels like.
Yep, he's out on Lake Travis, and we should definitely break him down. I bet you that he may be a bigger part of our preview next year because he has 2 years of eligibility left he can use. And next year, he won't be stuck behind Murphy Sweat and Collins.
You're assuming that I will ask you back to do this preview. However, I do agree on Trill Carter and his long-term impact at Texas. Trill is a stubby guy, kind of like Byron Murphy. Maybe even wider than Byron. Byron's more compact, sort of put together. And Trill, I think he's listed at 6'2". I think that's very optimistic. I think he's a little over 6 feet. High motor. One thing I noticed, and one thing I noticed about Minnesota in general, say all talk all the trash you want about PJ Fleck, and yes, he's a giant weirdo, and I don't like all the weird cliches and stupid sayings and all that stuff. And I'd probably roll my eyes if I was a senior at Minnesota. But you know what? Those dudes play freaking hard, especially on defense. If you watch Minnesota film, those guys get after it hard. And they play a lot of guys, they rotate. But when they are out there, they play like maniacs. And Trill Carter plays that way. And he's going to bring that to Texas. So that's a welcome addition in any football team when you've got a legitimate 24-game starter at a real program who's coming in and he's going to play 20, 25, 30 snaps for you. I mean, he is a luxury that I promise you the Oklahoma Sooners would love to have right now because he'd be starting for them.
I'm curious how he would do against double teams. I know that he's strong enough to grapple with guards one on one, but I didn't see him get doubled a lot at Minnesota, and I'm curious how he would look at doing so.
I saw
But
him get doubled some because part of Minnesota's scheme was that big wide three down lineman where you have two edges and then just a nose tackle by himself. And then you have a bunch of second level defenders, linebackers and safeties. And it gives you the illusion you can run the ball, but you actually can't really run the ball that effectively unless you can dominate Trill Carter. And I saw some situations where he was doubled there and he would just sort of use mobility sometimes to actually evade it, or he just get really small and sort of just hold it up and hold space, and then the second level would crash down and it'd be a 3 yard gain. So yeah, I saw some of that, and that's kind of what I really like about him is his motor, and he kind of does the dirty stuff. This is not a dude who pouts because he didn't get a sack, right?
Yeah.
So that's very valuable on a defensive line. Let's
Well,
talk about a dude. Go ahead.
Chris Nelson maybe is a good comp.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comp.
Reliable, strong, not going to let teams push Texas around, but maybe isn't going to flash on your television screen either.
Like 5'10" Ben Alexander. 5'10" Ben.
He's not bad that last year, right?
No, he was not bad that last year. That was
Yeah.
not an insult. Let's talk about Sadir Mitchell.
Oh.
That is one of the most massive human beings I've ever seen in a Texas uniform. And I've seen Leonard Davis. I've seen Cam Williams now. I've seen some really big dudes. Remember William Winston?
No.
Massive backup tackle in the VY teams. I've seen Mike Williams. I don't know if you remember that guy, but
yeah.
Holy moly, he was huge. Sadir Mitchell's massive. He's every bit of 6'6", 360. In the spring game, he turned my head. And he's carried that forward to the fall in the sense that it's the same things that turn people's head. For two or three plays, this guy's a handful. And then you got to get him off the field because he's young and he's out of shape. But I think he's going to play this year because they need to kind of play him and blood him a little bit, because I think he might start next year if he can get into shape.
Little Terrence Cody-ish.
Little Terrence Cody-ish, but I'm hoping more Jaheim Otis.
Sure.
So not much to say about Sadir because we haven't seen him play, but I'll just say he's difficult to move.
Yeah.
And actually on a pass rush, if your center can't anchor, he might get thrown into the quarterback. So a guy who does like to bring pass rush but doesn't necessarily anchor. Any guess who that is?
Yeah, I know who it is.
Vernon Broughton.
Yeah.
Fourth year junior. He does show the ability to pass rush. He's shown that before. He's a guy that we always thought would be probably a later developer because of his background in high school. Good athlete. He really has trouble anchoring. He plays high. Some of that is because he just plays high and he needs to get lower. Some of that is sort of how his anthropometry. He's cut high. He's high-waisted. And so I think it's tough for him to get low. The solution for that guy usually is just get real strong. But he has not done that yet. So we've heard good things about him, some flashes, but it's a pretty crowded room in there. I don't doubt that he'll make it on the field for some snaps, but is he going to be able to make significant contributions, or do you think he's going to get squeezed out by more reliable players?
I don't know what to make of his situation. I feel like they've talked him up a little bit recently. Sark has mentioned him a few times, but I remember them saying that about him last year.
Yep.
No.
Didn't really come through.
Yeah. He probably, honestly, he should have been a three down defensive end.
Yeah, just that's not really a
five technique more.
Yeah. The problem is situational packages on defense are just not, we talk about them like they're still.
I mean, he needed to be in a base scheme like that.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, to really maximize, I think. Oh, yeah. That probably would have been a better fit for him. But
talk about another guy who I think will be more relevant, just like Sadir Mitchell and maybe even Trill Carter in future years. It's going to be Aaron Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
He's a redshirt freshman. So there's still plenty of time, still plenty of juice to squeeze out of him. I just think it's such a crowded room. I don't see, I mean, he's going to play, but I don't see how he gets meaningful snaps in competitive games. What do you think?
Trill Carter starting kit. Although
yeah.
I think it's a little bigger than that.
He might be.
He's the kind of guy where, like, you just want to always have a number of guys like him in the program so that you get to a year where, like, Murphy, Collins, Sweat, whoever graduate, and it's like, don't worry. We have this guy who's been in the program for 3 or 4 years. We're not going to go over a cliff like, say, 2022 Nebraska with their defensive tackle play. We still have this guy that can get in the way. I think that that's, like, his certainly his floor at Texas. We're like, if they can just keep him around and keep him engaged, he's eventually going to be a guy that will start probably or play starter reps, but not this year.
A guy who could be that way just needs to get bigger, much bigger, Zach Swanson. redshirt freshman. Spring game, he showed me some things as an interior pass rusher. He's just active. He uses his hands pretty well. He can get small going through a gap and kind of side, make himself skinny and make himself difficult to get your hands on.
Well,
He can't anchor, and I don't know if he can do it against higher level offensive linemen unless he puts on some more strength and size and speed.
right. The
He'll have
problem
ample time. He'll have ample time to do that.
the skinny small guy can make himself small and skinny, right?
Yeah.
That's the double-edged sword there. He's
Yeah,
only
I will say as a
redshirt.
redshirt freshman, he's going to get bigger.
Yeah, he will. I very curious to see how it goes with him. He was a Choate or a PK recruit, I think. And
Arizona guy.
yeah, from their western neck of the woods. Yeah, I'm glad he's in the program, and we'll see what comes out. There are guys like that that Florida State got a transfer this offseason. That was a guy that was at like Western Michigan or something. In his like fifth year, he like had finally added enough weight, and he was athletic and coordinated, and he'd just been stacking techniques and all these skills. So when he finally had the weight and strength, he was like a force. And it didn't come until like his fifth year playing college football. I think at Texas, fans very easily lose sight of the fact that there are people like that in the world, because it's all about the 4 or 5 star recruit whose athleticism and power is immediately evident. So like the idea of this guy that's like, if you give this guy enough time in the weight room, like he could be something, he could be amazing, but it's going to be much later, right?
Yeah, the other problem, the part of that too, is that those guys, because of the portal,
Yeah.
they're not as inclined to sit and wait for their time. They go and transfer out to Arizona State and start, a year earlier, 2 years earlier than they should have. So that's the other tension. But if you win a bunch of games and you're part of a bigger thing that's bigger than yourself, and the coaches can really sell you on that, the dream, your fourth, fifth year, I think we're more likely to keep those guys around than in a program that's going 5-7, 8-4, whatever.
He's not a 4 or 5 star recruit that has those expectations
That's also
necessarily.
important.
I mean, he might, but he's not like he's been told for 2 years that he's like the truth, right?
All right, so this next guy is the hinge that will take us from the interior to the exterior, to the edge, because we're not sure about his best disposition.
Oh, okay.
He is a freaky athlete, arguably, maybe the best pure athlete on the defensive line in terms of his traits, flexibility, explosiveness, quickness. But he is as raw as sushi. You're not going to find much sushi where he's from, but we're talking about Dre Bledsoe. He is the redshirt freshman from East Texas. 6'4", 265, 270-ish. Do we think we want to bulk him up and make him a three technique? Or do we think ultimately he might be a 270-pound edge who's got enough traits and quickness and strength that he's a difference maker out there?
Yeah. If Jahre Bledsoe can become a three technique, then they should do that. That's just there's more value there. But to our earlier point about Collins and him taking a while to adjust to the scheme, this is not the under defense where the three technique just gets to go sick them, you know?
No. You got to eat some block. You got to eat some blocks sometimes in Pete
Yeah, block.
Bukowski's team.
Yeah. Which I'm okay with that. I think that that's a fine philosophy. But a lot of times it sets up the edges to make the plays. So I've leaned towards three technique, but what do you think? Where do you think his best?
I want to see him on the field in game action against live opponents, real opponents. And then I think I'll be convicted pretty quickly on where I see him. The other thing is I don't know his body frame. I haven't seen him like walking around in a t-shirt and shorts. Is he a guy that can just be 270 and build out and still get stronger and maintain all of his quickness or even get faster? Or is he a guy that just wants to be 300 pounds one day? You know, his body's screaming, like, feed me. I don't know. I suspect that he might be one of these rare guys that can sort of fashion his body to do whatever he wants it to do. And that's a pretty rare dude. It's like Alfred Collins, right?
Yeah. He could probably, I mean, he also, I think he could do everything PK wants at well under 300.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's so naturally powerful and athletic that he could be, like, he had, PK did this with Levi in Wuzariki, who played for him and his scheme at Washington at like 282 or 285 or something. Or even more recently, Moro Ojimo was not very heavy, but he did really anything PK wanted.
Yep.
And Bledsoe is like another level of athlete still. So I think he'll end up at three technique. I feel pretty confident that if they wanted to just make him an edge, that he could probably replace Sorrell next year and be excellent at it.
Yeah, he's just gifted, and you kind of got to see where his body and his traits take him. And then also play on the field. Would you be shocked of, like, when depth charts come out, Jahrae Bledsoe is going to be second team, maybe third team?
Yeah.
At the end of the season, would you be shocked if Jahrae Bledsoe had five sacks?
No, I mean, neither are Christian Jones either. Christian Jones called him like the hardest guy in the team to block, I think.
Yeah, maybe he just does inside moves over and over. He just spams inside moves. All right, so that's enough on Justin.
Let's get him on the field.
That's enough on Jahrae Bledsoe, but I do want to transition to another Jay here, who's a little bit of an opposite of Bledsoe, because if Bledsoe represents ceiling, I think Justice Finkley represents floor. And one of my concerns about Justice Finkley as a high school recruit when I saw his film was how they were playing him, his body. And my thought was, wow, he's really dominant at the high school level. And then my next thought was, do his traits translate up? Because he's 6'2", barely 6'2", I think.
I don't think he's 6'2".
Okay, I agree. I'm just trying to be optimistic. He's in the 250s. He is quick. He's fast for his size. He's powerful for his size. And the key word I keep adding to all that is for his size. And I don't just mean his body weight. It's also his height. Because if you're playing edge, unless you're incredibly powerful and or shockingly fast, like a blur, it's really tough to be impactful if you're short playing edge. It just doesn't mean you can't be a competent or constructive college player. It means there aren't a lot of 6'1" impactful NFL edges for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones you can think of are all the same dudes. And they all are shockingly fast and quick. Like, you can't believe watching them move. And they combine it with crazy leverage and power. You know, Dwight Freeney's. I don't think Finkley has that for his size. And so I think what you're left with is a very developed, high floor kind of guy who is useful because he plays hard. He's got a good motor. I've seen him be good on the move, as on a TE sort of stunt, tackle end stunts, where he's lined up on the edge and then he runs inside while the tackle goes outside, and that, you know, creates some indecision in the blocking and makes the offensive linemen move their feet, maybe turn their pads. I've seen him be effective there. I've not seen him effectively come around the edge and put pressure on a quarterback. in against the quality tackles on the roster.
Yeah. When he came, my comparison for him was Ryan Bowman, who was a 6 foot
Washington guy.
Yeah. 6 foot, eventually 280 pound edge. He was a walk on, shredded them as a member of the scout team. And so for like the next several years was like a regular contributor at edge. And, 6 foot oh, and did not have wingspan to compensate for it, but he had great motor. He was pretty quick, but here was the big thing with him: 685-pound squat.
Yeah, he was crazy strong.
Yeah, I think that's what Finkley. That's what needs to happen for him to be. He can probably be a reasonable contributor. I think he's the third edge on the team right now. And backs up both spots, but he's not going to stay there with some of the young guys that they've recruited or are going to bring in soon, like Colin Simmons. If they hold on to that, he's not going to stay at the top of the depth chart unless he's like Bowman, where he's developing just unbelievable strength, play strength that translates.
Agreed, 100%. I think that's a great comp, and I think that's his best upside. And so. His battle is not necessarily the guys ahead of him trying to become a starter. His battle is fending off the guys behind him.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the guy that sort of been probably the guy we let off with the edges, but he's also sort of a known factor, and I don't think Texas fans need much introduction to him, but Baron Sorrell, third-year junior, really played well last year. Strong against the run. I'd say an above average pass rusher.
Yeah.
When they let him cut loose, because he's not always allowed to be cut loose. 6'4", 260. He's getting stronger every year. Good technique, good intensity, good motor. He had 44 tackles, 5.5 sacks, 9 tackles for loss. 7 quarterback hurries in 2022. Very productive player. We love the guy at edge. It's a damn shame he's not flanked on the other edge by like a crazy pass rusher, because you could really unleash this defense. As it is, do we think Sorrell could be a 7 or 8 sack guy?
No doubt. Yeah, it kind of needs to be.
Yeah.
I think I don't have a great comp for him off the top of my head. I almost want to stay like I don't remember this guy that well. So you can, if you do, maybe you can correct me. Do you remember Stansley Maponga for TCU?
No. Oh, I mean, I remember the name. I don't remember his play style or anything about him much.
Yeah. My memory of him is honestly not good enough to make this comp. But I just think like a highly skilled, strong, high motor guy, especially playing in the Big 12, can probably technique and effort his way to 8 to 10 sacks if he's on a good defense that forces the quarterback to hold the ball and he's in a good scheme. I think that's what the hope is for Sorrell this season.
Agreed. I think I see some similarities between him and Cedric Reed.
Yeah.
Cedric Reed, I think, was a little bigger.
Yeah.
Longer, too. But some similarities there. And I think he's sound as the pound. Like, Baron Sorrell is just a very reliable player. You know what you're going to get from him, right?
Yeah.
And as I said, it's a shame he's not complimented by some crazy pass rushing freak on the other edge. And maybe we'll put that guy in situationally, named Anthony Hill, but he's not going to be an every down player.
This is only going to be Sorrell's third year.
That's right. Yeah. So, and he's gotten better every year, considerably better.
Yeah.
So there's no idea that he's maxed out. I mean, he's going to max out at some point because he doesn't have crazy traits. But he hasn't maxed out yet.
Yep.
Let's talk about a guy who also has long-term upside, in part because he's got exactly the sort of frame that you're looking for in a classic edge. That's Ethan Burke. 6'6". I believe now he's in the mid-250s, which is good, or high-250s. Has worked on his body, worked on getting stronger. He's a true sophomore. So he did see some spot action as a freshman, enough to burn his shirt. He's looking like the guy who's going to start opposite Sorrell. There's good and bad to that. I think the key is, the more I think about it, and we'll see. I'll be very curious. I'll be laughing at the end of the season if this guy's got 11 sacks. But I think his position may be a little bit of a crowd source, where they're going to play a lot of different guys in different roles, ranging from Justice Finkley to Jahrae Bledsoe potentially, to of course Ethan Burke, to Tap Ross, and Anthony Hill, right? So I do think he'll be the starter. I think he'll play the most snaps at that position. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think another way to say that is that when Texas is in the 2-4-5 base nickel, he's going to be the guy a lot because he's good or acceptable at a lot of different things. So he's way better at dropping into coverage than a lot of most any other 6'6 guy I've seen. Like he just turns and runs pretty easily at that size. And then he's got the arm, the incredible length to discourage throws. So he's good at that. And that is important in this scheme because Pete Kwiatkowski likes to blitz and drop those guys. I think he's getting to an acceptable level in run defense. Every time Sark talks about him, it's basically like this kid will do anything it takes to get the job done, blue collar, grit, figure out an angle, figure out a way to get the job done. And then I think he's probably, I mean, for his position, maybe not above average, but he's a good pass rusher, good natural pass rusher, maybe the best at that position Texas has currently with everybody's current state of development because they have so much youth in that room. And so I think it's just going to be a thing where like when they're in the base nickel and they need to be able to defend anything and everything, or they want to call anything and everything, he's going to get a lot of snaps because he's versatile. But when it's like it's go get the quarterback time, then like Anthony Hill, right? When it's got to stop the run time, then Finkley or the 3-4 or something like that, or
Alfred Collins.
Collins, whatever it is that they're doing, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, but every down flexibility, I think work.
He's not strong yet. He shouldn't be. He's a true sophomore, and particularly given his frame. But I would say don't underestimate the power of length and good feet. You can defeat much stronger blockers by getting your hands on them first and keeping your feet moving. Have good agile feet. I think he's, as Ian was saying, his dropbacks and stuff. For a 6'6" guy, he's kind of nifty. His feet are coordinated and dexterous.
Like
And
a
that
tight end.
can, like a tight end, just like a big 6'6" tight end can lock on to your linebacker or defensive end and beat him just off of length and good feet. I think Burke can do the same. Now, do you want to line him up at 4-eye against Bama? No. No. It's not going to go well. But is he capable of using that length and good feet and motor to hold a moving edge, right? Not a stationary edge, like the running outside zone, where you're kind of hitting the blockers, hitting you on the run, and you're grappling with him out on the move. He'll be fine. I think he'll be fine. Let's talk about a guy that did his own Jenny Craig experiment in the offseason, threw that away. And then I'm not sure what to make of him because I wasn't impressed with him in the spring game, even though some people apparently were. Chris Ross, very interesting player in high school. Played on the interior defensive line in the 260s, the high 260s, and showed great get off. Really good off the ball, very explosive, long arms, despite being, about 6'2". And kind of an interesting player. I think, here's my theory, and I have no information on this. I think he decided on his own. There's a bunch of good interior defensive linemen. I'm caught up in that logjam. There's an opening at edge. We don't have enough edges. I'm going to make myself an edge because I'm quick. I've got good get off. I've got long arms. So the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to drop 30 pounds on my own and then show up for spring practice. And I'm not going to be strong enough. I'm going to be weak. And my play speed hasn't really changed because my power is sort of fundamental to my nature, irrespective of my weight. In fact, it may decrease when I'm smaller because I can't move people. And now I'm a third team edge instead of the third team interior defensive lineman. Since that spring game, I think the coaches had a little chat with him and said, "Hey, man, we didn't bring you in to be 240 pounds. You need to get your weight up." So now he's back up in the 250s, apparently. And apparently still playing edge and looking better now that he's gained some weight back. So I don't know what better means. In the spring game, I was not impressed with him. He couldn't disengage from blocking. Yes, Kelvin Banks, Christian Jones, I get it, but he also went against other guys too. So I don't know what to make of Chris Ross. I'm not sure Chris Ross knows what to make of Chris Ross. And I'm not sure the coaches know what to make of Chris Ross. So do you have anything to add to
Yeah, I thought he
my
actually
little
moved.
screen?
Yeah, that's a funny theory. I thought he actually moved well in the spring game. He didn't look out of place on the perimeter. I think the hope would be that he's the next Baron Sorrell. The key with, because he has like pretty athletic, good hands, length, right? We just described Baron Sorrell. But the missing ingredient, well, I don't know if it's missing or not, but the reason that Baron Sorrell translates all those into being an increasingly very good and productive football player is the work ethic and the commitment. And I don't know if Chris Ross has that or not. He
Yeah,
might. I have no idea.
also Baron Sorrell got strong.
You're right.
Every year he's gotten stronger at Texas. Chris Ross got weaker in the spring.
Well, before he came to Texas, probably, right?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. He's gonna be, he's a guy that's like better know for sure what you're doing and be very committed to it because you're gonna find yourself in the transfer portal with the way they're recruiting at that position if you don't have some major value add. But
Yeah.
all he's actually been fairly promising, so we'll see.
Yeah, Marquez Bimage did this. If you guys remember him
Yeah.
from Brenham. So Bimage's value was that he was extremely strong at about 6'2", 270. And because he was that strong, he could hold up on the interior as like a three technique or even a four eye. But because he was 270, he was quicker than the offensive lineman across from him. So that was his value proposition. And he was a rotation player who was very productive. He got in his head that he wanted to play defensive end. Do you remember this, Ian?
Yeah, they did move to a four down, so they kind of negated his position a little bit, but
I mean, you could still play undersized defensive tackle and spot snaps if you're super strong and quick,
yeah.
right? And we were still like doing the penetrating defensive line thing. Right. So Bimage,
This was with Chris Ash, right? This happened in 2020, or was it
Marquez
20?
Bimage,
Yeah.
What year was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, because if it was in 2020, it's at least it's like, well, I wanted to find a starting role in Chris Ash's defense. If it was in 2019, then it's just like, dude, what big mistake.
Yeah, I think it was around that time. I'm not exactly sure, but the point is, on his
Right.
own, he basically decided I'm going to lose 30 pounds, and he stopped lifting to get quicker, to get faster. And so what happened is they got this guy who's weak, who couldn't play edge because he's not fast enough, and now he's weak, and now he can't play inside because he's way too small and he lost his strength.
I bet it
So
was
he
2022, because then he would have been like maybe out on his own a little bit with COVID.
Yeah, maybe, but he transferred to Cal
Yeah.
and then ended up playing outside linebacker at Cal in like a 3-4. And he was okay there, but just I think sometimes players get wild hairs and they do something on their own without consultation with the coaches, or the coaches weren't smart enough to sort of say, hey, this is our vision for you, your play weight, your position. This is what we want you to report at. You'd think as a bare minimum, that's what a program would do, but maybe they did. Maybe these guys didn't get the message. All right, enough digression on that. Colton Vosick and Billy Walton. I've heard good things about both in practice. They're not going to play. I mean, y'all save your tweets and your comments. Billy Walton will play against Rice and he's going to have a sack in the fourth quarter. I get it. And you're going to be like, what's that, Scipio? He's not playing against Bama, y'all. Neither is Colton Vasek. So I think both guys look really interesting. Billy Walton was a guy that you see it in high school, and you're kind of like, whoa, all right. If we're getting 3 stars, that's the kind of 3-star I want. He looks the part, and I see the play, right? Super athletic guy, not quite clear what his position is. Let's get him in. Let's put on weight, get him strong, and see where he settles in. Is he a linebacker? Is he an edge? I think we're learning he's an edge.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about him, and he looks very promising. Could be very good. He doesn't have the explosiveness of a three star. I don't really know why he was a three star. Maybe he was a little small or something. I don't know.
Tweener. He's considered small.
Yeah, he didn't look that small from something I saw.
He, you know, who else was kind of a similar profile
I mean, who?
to him? No. Menahu is 6'6".
Right. We go who?
Arakpo.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Arakpo reported at 210
I do remember that.
to Texas. Not 210 anymore.
Yeah, Walton. Yeah, maybe. Him and Vosick are gonna be good in all likelihood. Maybe very, very, very good.
Potentially.
And they have a lot of really promising traits. I really think it's a fantastic win for Texas that they signed Colin Simmons. They didn't sign him, but that they got the verbal commitment from Colin Simmons. But I don't necessarily know if he's going to waltz in and start immediately, like everyone says.
That is a super interesting point, Ian,
And I
because
don't, and I don't, if they lost him, I don't know if they'd be in that bad of shape. The opportunity cost is high because he's one of the best edge prospects I've ever seen in my life, right?
yes.
But I think with or without him, they have the guys to have really good edges in the future.
I actually think edge is going to be the strength of the team in the foreseeable future if guys develop the way I think they're going to. That said, I would like Colin Simmons on the team,
For
Ian.
sure, because he's amazing.
Colin, if you're listening to the podcast, Ian is a fool and a contrarian. Ignore him. I know the point you were making. The last guy I want to talk about, this is a guy, speaking of traits, and I loved his film in high school. I was excited to get him from Louisiana, Jamon Tapp. Then I see him in the spring game, Ian, and I was not pleased with his growth or development. He had a couple of little plays where he was credited with sacks or TFLs, but it didn't have anything really to do with what he did. So I thought he looked a little slower and a little ponderous in the spring. And maybe it was confusion. Maybe he's put on a little bad weight. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't, it wasn't his day. I don't know. But Jamon Tapp in high school, I was like, oh, great. We got another one of these Louisiana bouncy dudes who's not fully developed. He's going to be Malcolm Roach or something, right?
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it yet. By the way, he's a redshirt freshman, so maybe he's not supposed to show it yet. But did you have any thoughts on Tapp?
Not really. He was like a listed at like 260 something in the spring game.
Yeah.
So it's reasonable to ask whether that is
That good weight?
all good weight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a bad weight to play at, but when you get that so quickly, was how great.
Yeah, it's kind of like, how did you get there and what's it comprised of and where is it?
Yeah.
If it's all on your legs and your butt, then cool. If it's kind of just bulk, less cool.
Yeah.
So, Ian, that is the Texas defensive line.
You did it.
In summation, we really like the interior defensive line. Not just the number of bodies and the quality of bodies, but the diversity of skill sets and abilities. The edge, I think we really like Baron Sorrell. I think we think he's a very reliable football player. We're not entirely sure about the other edges, but we know that there's some guys with traits that it's not crazy to think they step up. I mean, at this time last year, I was trying to convince people that Jalen Ford would be a solid interior linebacker. And he turned out a little better than that.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, we think we know and we don't know. Because until you get on the in these games, some of the guys that we were counting on, we may be like, man, Tavondre Sweat's a little sluggish early this, in the early part of the year. He's not going to get as many snaps and he comes on in November, right? Whatever. Maybe Ethan Burke is a freaking gamer. We don't know. So you kind of have to just surmise based on what you do know. And I think what we do know is big picture, we're pretty happy with this group. But it's still got some upside to it if some guys come through.
Yeah, especially at the feature edge positions. You want
I
it?
also, well, I also wanted to say I feel like the downside can be pretty much mitigated or minimized.
Yeah, I think so. Let me ask you a question.
Yes,
Are
sir.
we wrapping up? Okay. Who would you bet on to be the start? Let's say Texas makes the Big 12 championship game, which they
Okay.
better. Sorrell starting a Jack. Who is starting at weak side end with the championship on the line? Ethan Burke, Anthony Hill, or Justice Finkley?
Who are we playing?
Who, Texas Tech.
Anthony Hill, baby.
Interest rates are up and the market is tumultuous, and now more than ever, you need the best darn possible mortgage broker working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow, and you can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. What makes Gabe so unique? Well, he's incredibly bright. He's a UT grad. He's got a law degree. He's been in the mortgage industry for over 20 years, and he is a true mortgage broker. What does that mean? It means he can shop for the best deal at over 80 different lenders and find you the terms that best suit you. Most mortgage guys you talk to won't reveal that they have exactly one size fits all for you and exactly one conduit to get your loan. If you are in these hyper competitive markets and you're in these markets that have frankly gotten a lot less friendly to the consumer, you need the best possible person working on your behalf. That's Gabe Winslow. He has our full endorsement. You can reach him at 832-557-1095.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. And we're playing Texas Tech back to back. So we beat them in Austin and then we play them again in the title game and beat them again.
Yep, and then make Brett Yormark hand him the trophy. After.
By the way, I would not let Brett Yormark on the stage. I would say, hand me the trophy. I'm going to have Quinn Ewers hand me the trophy, and then I'll make my comments. You could stay down there.
If you're imagining vindictive dreams, I would go the other way and have make him hand you the trophy on national television with everyone to see.
And say as you receive it, I'm sorry that your tech bet didn't come through, Brett. Of course, We're talking about the recent remarks from Brett Yormark, encouraging Texas Tech to beat Texas, which is exactly what a conference commissioner should be doing. Great, great job, Brett. Enjoy your league. All right, Ian, any farting? Probably the whole time we've been podcasting, but any parting thoughts on defensive line? Anything that we need to put a bow on? Now a dog is moving into the picture.
I don't understand what's happening.
It's always either Ian's son or his dog looking for affection.
She should be done. I don't know what she's doing. She never does this. So.
Oh, that's funny. Nope. Ian, any final thoughts? Or are you
no
just going
to?
Verbal medium. No one can see your dog looking in the camera, looking very cute. All right, man. Hey, for Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, welcome. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.